Was there a boycott on this side? All right, we got a couple of things happening this Shabbos. It's a big Shabbos. First of all, it's Adar, number one. Mishenichnas Adar Marvin Basimcha. That's number one. Number two, it's Parsha Zohar. All right, guys. Reach your limit. And thirdly, obviously, we have the regular Parsha, Parshas Tetzaveh. All right, concerning each one of these topics, I have a question. Number one, why Mishenichnas Adar Marvin Besimcha? Adar certainly had a miracle, but doesn't compare to the miracles of Nisan. So why don't we have Mishenichnas Nisan Marvin Besimcha? Matter of fact, I researched this. Eliyahu Rabba, one of the Achronim, holds that Mishenichnas Nisan also Marvin Besimcha. But we don't hold that way. Number two, Parsha Zohar. All right, so Zohar is Hashem Asalucham Alek, Adoraisa. All right, so what am I supposed to contemplate? What Amalek did to me, to my nation, when we came out of Mitzrayim, when all the nations of the world were fearful of us, and Amalek says, I don't care, I'd rather get killed, but at least I'll diss the Jews, which is a German mentality. So what am I supposed to do with that? What am I supposed to go with to a guy, an Aryan guy, and ask him, by the way, can I know your great-great-grandfather's name and trace it back and shoot him? What am I supposed to do with this information that Amalek attacked the Jews and I'm supposed to get all upset at Amalek? What am I supposed to do with all this information? Number three, Parshas Tetzaveh, a lot of you may know by now, there's one thing missing in Parshas Tetzaveh. Anybody know? Excellent. Moshe Rabbeinu's name. Come upstairs for a cameo. Moshe Rabbeinu's name. Does anyone know why his name was deleted? Because Moshe Rabbeinu had said when he asked for kapara for Klal Yisrael, he said, "Vim ayin," and if not, if they don't have kapara, forgiveness, Mecheni na misifrecha, blot me out of your sefer. So he got blotted out. But why Parshas Tetzaveh? So I'm going to try to connect. It's a little imaginative, but I'm going to try to connect all these three ideas. And then, of course, the main thing is the story. So there's something about Nisan that is so awesome that actually there's a reason why we're not Marvin Besimcha. You would think to the contrary. The greater the miracle, the greater the simcha. The answer is, we don't relate to miracles where the laws of nature change. It's not something we relate to, nor can we expect it to ever happen again until Yemos HaMashiach. The laws of nature will not be openly broken for us till Yemos HaMashiach, and at that juncture, then the laws of nature will be broken. So in a sense, Adar, which represents Klal Yisrael's devastating feeling of being in Golus and thinking that the 70 years were up, if you learn Megillah, that depressing feeling sitting by Sudas HaChashverosh where he takes out the Klei HaMikdash and we don't even protest because we're so depressed anyway, we forget it's over. It's like almost like it's over. We're done. And then all of a sudden things turn around. In the darkness, there's all of a sudden light out of nowhere without open miracles because the Megillah happened over the course of many years and you had to like piece it together. And then, oh, that's what happened. That's something that gives us tremendous joy and hope because that's something we can relate to. Now, when we read about Amalek, obviously it means on a literal sense, remember what Amalek did. But there's a deeper level. What did Amalek represent, basically? Amalek represented that denial of God's existence. They couldn't stand it. They just couldn't stand that the Jews just beat the mightiest nation in the world and just walked right out like that. That means there's a God. They couldn't deal with that, that godliness was everywhere. And they had to dampen that spirit. That's what Amalek did. They were going to jump into that hot tub and get burnt, but at least they cooled off with their dead bodies, like Rashi says. Now, what does it have to do with us? It has a lot to do with us. Because very often, even when we're overwhelmed with our learning or a speech or an experience, and we said, Yesh Elokim, and there's Tayag Mitzvahs, and there's everything, but then there's a part of us that niggles us, well, maybe there's not. Maybe there's not, because if there is, I have to keep all the Tayag Mitzvahs and all the Drabbanans associated with it, and my life is over, so I better start doubting that. Is this 100% correct? And we start to doubt, maybe, like Amalek, the existence of Hashem. So we're supposed to think about the hidden miracles that we had. We're supposed to think about that little part of us that denies God's existence unless God comes out up front and shows us a miracle and lifts this building right now. And why Parshas Tetzaveh, of all places? Parshas Tetzaveh is the big day kahuna. The Medrash says that Moshe Rabbeinu was supposed to be the Kohen Gadol, but he said, no, I have enough. Give it to Aaron HaKohen. So in the Parsha where Aaron HaKohen shines the most, Moshe Rabbeinu, his name was taken out. Don't mix me. This is his Parsha. Meaning Moshe Rabbeinu was the greatest Anav ever to live. This self-effacement where he totally negates the ego within himself to allow for someone else to shine, that represents Moshe Rabbeinu. It's not for naught that Moshe Rabbeinu is also considered to be the greatest Navi that ever existed. Because like the Kutzker Rebbe once said, if someone asks, where is God? It's wherever you let him in. That's where God is. And we have a tendency not to let him in. But if somebody who is self-effacing allows spirituality to enter, that who Moshe Rabbeinu was the epitome of spirituality, that's why he was the greatest Navi and spoke directly to God, panim el panim. And if we would study the life of Moshe Rabbeinu, if we would remember what Amalek represents, that little niggling thought in our mind, that starts to doubt Hashem's existence, then if we fight that, then we'll understand that we're never in a hopeless situation. I don't care that there's Iran that's getting nukes very soon. How soon? Let Netanyahu darshan his way, Obama will darshan his way. Everyone's going to darshan from here to tomorrow, and then the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and everyone has Torah, this and that. At the end of the day, if you believe in the God of Purim, then sit back and chill. And what's your job? Your job is to connect with other Jews. That's your only job. It's the only thing you could do. I don't believe the IDF has an answer. I don't believe any of these generals, the why we have, I don't believe it. There is no Eitzah. There is no Eitzah. There's nothing to be done except sit back and get close to other Jews and do chesed. There's nothing else. Believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's powers to the fullest degree. My Rebbe once said over a cute line, he said there were two people discussing other political situations years ago about Israel. And the guy said to them, well, this or Russia will get involved in. He says, well, what do you worry about? There's Ribbono Shel Olam. He says, yeah, of course there's Ribbono Shel Olam. But we were having a discussion, if there was no God, what would happen? Very often we're like that. We have discussions figuring out political moves. Will Netanyahu's speech change the political climate? What will happen with Iran and this? We have to learn from Purim. We have to learn from Amalek. that it's a Ribbono running the world, and we have to give up that ego, that control that we think we have. If we're self-effacing, if we're modest and giving to other people. Yaakov Avinu said he'll reveal Mashiach when Mashiach will come, but he first said to his sons, gather around me. If we're together, then we could bring the Mashiach. I just want to tell you a couple of stories that I consider to be, first of all, they're true stories. That's number one. And just before I get started with the story, I wanted to tell you something very fascinating, extremely fascinating that I found. All right? This is from Rav Shlomo Lawrence, a former Knesset member for many, many years of the Agudas Yisrael party. You can actually look up this story in the archives of the Knesset. All right? Harry S. Truman, all right, President of the United States, who is credited with helping the state of Israel exist. Many people, and I was against what he did, was heroic, because the State Department, everyone was against recognizing Israel. And the most common explanation is, why did this guy recognize this? Because he once had a Jewish partner in the haberdashery business, in the hat business, in Independence, Missouri. And many decades later, he came to visit him. He says, do me a favor, Harry, and help out my Jewish brethren in Palestine. That's the prevailing story I grew up with. I don't know if Rabbi Snow, you heard that story? You heard the story. That's the story. Well, guess what? Rabbi Lawrence met Harry S. Truman and asked him straight up. He says, Harry S. Truman, quote, you should know that when I agreed to recognize the state of Israel, it went against the advice of my advisors. It was against every political instinct that I have. But I tell you why I did it. I was a little boy growing up in the United States of America, and every little boy growing up in the United States dreams of becoming president. That was my dream. And I'll tell you something else. I was a good Christian boy. And I learned my Bible. And my hero in the Bible was King Cyrus, who in Hebrew is Koresh, who is a descendant of Queen Esther. This Koresh, if you know your history, was the one who let the Jewish people go back to their homeland and build the Beis HaMikdash, their temple, he said. I said to myself as a little kid, if I ever become president of the United States of America, I want to imitate my hero Cyrus, and if I ever get the opportunity to let the Jewish people go back to their country and rebuild their temple, that's what I'm going to do. And said President Truman, and that is why I recognize the state of Israel. Now go figure that one. If that's not a Nes Purim, what is? Harry S. Truman was reading his Christian Bible, and Cyrus Koresh became his hero? Is that random? It's wild stuff. But I want to tell you a couple of stories about regular people and some gedolim who exhibited this nida of vatranut. Vatranut slavatera means to forgo, not to stand on ceremony about your kavod. And it's just elevating, because at the end of the day, the chesed that we've been promoting here, which was done so beautifully, I enjoyed a cup of joe, and other people, their hot chocolates. You know, it's a shtick right now, but if the shtick remains with you, you could become a shtick Jew. You could become a real Jew from all this, because the chitzonios, the actions we do, is ma'ores apnimius. Not always can we work from the inside out. We have to work from the outside in. Now, I don't know if you heard this story or not, but it's a true story. A couple of them are really phenomenal. Yad Eliezer, Rabbi Abel's family started Yad Eliezer, which I believe has a budget now, helps on Aniyim and Eretz Yisrael, budget running in the $20 million a year range. It's an unbelievable organization. If you have an Eretz Yisrael, a lot of our guys help out Yad Eliezer. Anyway, Yad Eliezer also built a wedding hall for people who can't afford to make weddings. It's called the Wolf Hall. Obviously, they got this guy Wolf to donate a lot of money. And it has two halls in it. One, a larger hall, Ulam Aleph, hall number one, and Ulam Bet. All right? Ulam Bet. One's bigger than the other one. So everyone knows, comes to wedding, you book it right away. It's very cheap. It's a big thing. And it's very nice. You don't have to be embarrassed to make a wedding there. And lo and behold, this girl Leah gets engaged. Her parents call up. You got Eliezer, and they book. Of course, Ulam Aleph. All right? 2 days later, call Yocheved, goes ahead and calls. Her parents call, and they said they want Ulam Aleph. Said it's booked already. Who's it booked with? Turns out she knows this other girl, the Kala. So she was having a lot of guests. Yocheved fly in from the United States. It's going to be a huge wedding. They really needed desperately Ulam Aleph. Nice and comfortable place. So she called up this girl that she knew, sort of, and said, maybe you could, like, give up on your rights of Ulam Aleph, because you don't have as many guests, and move to Ulam Bet. She says, not really, it's, you know, it's my wedding, it's once in a lifetime, you know, I don't want people sitting there like that, you know? But she was in shul, and she, it was the week where you read about Rachel giving over the simanim to Leah. And she realized, wait a second, Rachel gave away her simanim. She thought she gave everything away. Everything away, right? She's not going to ever marry him. At the end of the day, we know what happened with giving away the simanim. Not only did she marry him, but she merited to have children even though she was barren, because Vayiskar, Hashem remembered the selfless act that she did, and it hit her. Hey, wait a second. You can never lose from being mevater, from being selfless. She called her friend, sort of, and she called her up. He said, you can have the whole. Beautiful, moving story. Amazing, but the end of the story is mind-boggling. That night, two weddings are going on. There's a wealthy guy that calls up Yad Eliezer from the United States of America. By the way, this happens pretty often. I don't know if you know, the other week there was a $2 million wedding. I don't know if you saw clips of it. There was another one in L.A. for $5 million. It doesn't have to be that rich, but a lot of people feel if they're making a beautiful simcha, they have to share it with other people, and Eretz Yisrael is the place they call. They call up Yad Eliezer. Do you have any weddings happening on the night of our daughter's wedding? Sure. We have two weddings going on. I know you have two holes there, Ulam Aleph and Ulam Bet. Probably the people in Ulam Bet are not as wealthy maybe as Ulam Aleph people. So I would like to celebrate my daughter's wedding knowing that I made another wedding, so I want to cover the expenses of Ulam Bet. So Ulam Bet is going to be free the night of our daughter's wedding. So when you're mevater, let me tell you another quick story. I don't know if you heard this one. There was a guy, Menachem, a kid, who prepared for his bar mitzvah. However long kids prepare for, I don't know what the standard is right now. When he came to shul, he saw a lot of faces he never recognized before, and lo and behold, the gabbai had made a huge mistake. He had double booked the bar mitzvahs, and both boys were coming to lay in the parsha. Came old Tomo will split. Listen, Baruch Shem, I have twins. I know what it's like. They split the parsha. They split this. They split the speech. They split the kogel. They split everything. They split. Actually, people were nice. They gave each one of them presents. Each one of them. But anyway, so one of them, Menachem, sees what's going on, and he says, "All right, I'm pulling out. Pulling out. You lame. I'll do the haftarah. You do the whole parsha." That's gevura. That's strength of character. All right, he didn't lay, but the next year, and the next year, and the next year, he did lay, because it wasn't a bar mitzvah, but he knew the parsha. 17 years old, and unfortunately his mother's ill. She has a very serious heart condition, and she's in the hospital, and he went to the minyan that he heard was upstairs, and none other than the Gadol HaDor's room, Shalom HaYashu, Zichrono Livracha, Yeshu Shalom HaYashu, Rabbi Yashu's room. went up there, he dammed their Marev. The next day, Shacharis, whatever time he came there. Rabbi Yasha was makbid on a beautiful Sefer Torah, only the best in Yerushalayim was brought to him. And then the Gabbai turned white when he realized there is no Baal Kori. Rabbi Yasha. You can't just get up there and wing it with Rabbi Yasha. You know, you don't wing it. So this 7-year-old boy, man, says, I come in. Ani yachol lekoach laseh parsha. Yes, I didn't know how to do it. He said, I know how to do it. Gets up there flawlessly. I think it was Parshas Yisro, if I recall correctly. This story is so true. It was told over by Rebbetzin Batsheva Kanievsky. It's a good source. So anyway, he lays it flawlessly. Rabbi Yashiv was like very happy. Every trop, everything, every didictic was perfect. Rabbi Snow would be thrilled. It was perfect. Rabbi Yashiv was thrilled. And he asked to call over the boy. The boy went over to him. He was standing from the Gadol Hador. He said, how do you know? He told him the story. It was bar mitzvah. The whole story. Wow. He's blown away by the godless of the boy. He says, tell me, why are you here? He says, my mother's not well. What's the problem? She has a heart condition. Now, an entire team from St. Louis had flown in on a special chartered flight to help Rabbi Yash, sponsored by Glick. And they flew an entire cardiologist team from this hospital, famous hospital, I think it was in St. Louis. And they were there in the hospital. She says to his gabbai, he says, go visit his mother. See what my specialists say. And they went there and they found out, they realized there was something that wasn't being done that could have been done for her. And Baruch Hashem, they changed the protocol and things got better. Don't ever think, guys, that when you're giving up something, when you're being mavater, you're not gaining. You don't have to do it for gaining. You could do it just for the mitzvah. But you're never giving up anything, really. You're only getting. It says, but v'yikhu li truma. It should say, v'yitnu li. Why v'yikhu? Because when you give, you what? You take. And v'nasanu can be read both ways. Because when you give, it comes right back. Have a good job. Appreciate it.